Evening. This is a meeting of the Streets Committee for Sylvania City Council. Present tonight is myself, Patrick Richardson, as chair of the committee. Committee members Sean Murphy, Doug Hannan, and Jack Hand. We have from City Council, Mary Westfall, Marcus Hansen. We have many members of the administration and the community here tonight. But we are going to first start by having Mr. Shaw start with the presentation he prepared on roundabouts, so.
Thank you, Mr. Richardson. Good evening, everyone. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about roundabouts tonight. I'll move probably back a little bit more, so I'm not talking, you know, with my back to people as I go. But, so yeah, got the opportunity to talk here about roundabouts. So I want to kind of walk through what we're going to be doing tonight. So we're going to go over a little bit of terminology to make sure everybody's on the same page. I'm going to go through some safety metrics, especially on vehicular and pedestrian movements. I'm going to go through some cost analysis as it relates from a traffic signal to a roundabout. And then I'm going to go specifically into some information that was prepared by our Metropolitan Planning Organization, TMACOG. They did a roundabout study in 2023 that I'll go into. And then we'll dig into local stuff here in Sylvania and what's planned. So that's kind of the slate. I'll start here with a quick video for you.
Well, a new roundabout is coming to Sylvania, and get this, it's going to have this bow tie design you see behind me. The new traffic circle will be at the intersection of Erie and Monroe on the western end of downtown Sylvania. That's according to the city. The layout is said to also look like a dog bone, and it is planned to replace a traffic signal at the intersection. With the design decision now made, preliminary designs can now begin. And the goal of the new design, they say, well, a safer street for drivers.
Roundabouts are going to be more safer than the current intersection that's there. You know, we're excited for the options here that came of this traffic study. But most importantly, you know, traffic and, you know, making sure things are safe for our community is what's paramount in everything we do.
The public chose this design because it allowed drivers easy access to San Reno Drive. The project is expected to cost just over $3.5 million and is scheduled to begin construction in 2027.
Right, so certainly public interest with these things, there's no doubt about it. So nice of Jeff Smith to give us the time to present on that a little bit. Sorry about my shirt. Didn't have City of Sylvania stuff at the time, so I had an Anthony Wayne shirt on. So my apologies. So, okay, so let's get into some terminology and then we'll step through some metrics. So terminology 101, just to make sure everybody's on the same page, I'm going to refer to a couple of things in here as we go. We'll start from the center and then work our way out. Our center island is the raised area which traffic circulates. That's our middle area. And of it is comprised of a truck apron, which is the mountable portion of the center island. So usually your islands are raised, and then the truck apron portion of that allows for our largest vehicles, generally in our fleet, to wheel track around it, called a truck apron. Circulatory roadway, that's the piece where your design vehicle stays and doesn't have to use the apron. So our school buses traditionally here in Sylvania are my design vehicle. Depending if I'm in a truck area, like if you go to Sylvania and Centennial, a lot of trucks that go through that area, give you a little bit bigger circle, maybe a little bit bigger circulatory roadway to travel on. And then the splitter islands are key. So those are these guys right here. Those are our splitter islands, and those are serve two functions. Number one, they separate exiting and entry traffic to the roundabout, and they also provide for two-stage pedestrian crossings of our road. Okay, so that's kind of just some terminology for it. Safety is big with these, and this is what you hear a lot about. So what you have on your right side of your screen is a roundabout kind of geometric as well as an intersection geometric. And so if you start on the far right with the intersection, you have 32 vehicular conflict points that exist and 24 pedestrian conflicts. So each one of those red dots is a spot where a vehicle and vehicle can come together. And then the yellow dots are your pedestrian conflicts. If you move over to the roundabout version, that drastically reduces 75% reduction in your vehicle-to-vehicle conflicts, and a 67% reduction in your pedestrian conflicts. What's great about the roundabout is the severity of your collisions that happen is determined by speed and angle of impact. So anytime on the right, if you come together with a vehicle that's crossing in an opposite direction, generally speaking, the angle of impact is higher than it would be at a roundabout. Roundabouts are kind of more side swiping or rear end. It's your intersections, they can be much more right angle, and that, and as a result, much more severe. Pedestrians at intersections. So the chances of you getting hit by a vehicle and surviving are shown in this graph here. This is provided by Federal Highway Administration. And it's tied to speed. So if you start at the left-hand side of the screen, at 20 miles per hour, if you are hit by a vehicle, your chances of not surviving that are 15%. Okay? So if you just increase that 10 miles an hour, again, that's still below posted speed limits in many of our Sylvania community streets where these might go. You go up to 45%. You have a flip of the coin chance of surviving that accident as a pedestrian. Now, if you're somewhere between posted speed limit here, mostly in Sylvania, up to 40 miles per hour, the chances of you surviving that as a pedestrian are very unlikely, about 15% survival rate. Speed plays a huge factor in these devices, and that's why they're generally safer, because they reduce speeds. So what does a pedestrian-friendly roundabout look like? So I'll go over a couple of the metrics that you have here. Approach curves are huge. There's usually a deflection, an offset deflection, to get that speed to reduce down on approach. You have a crosswalk that sits back from the yield line here, and that's usually a minimum of 20 feet, sometimes 25 feet. So that you are the first thing that you see, usually not the vehicles that are approaching or in the roundabout. Lighting is a huge feature. A well-lit roundabout is great for pedestrians. You show up. And then channelizing everything to the outside of it. So we're not crossing anywhere in the middle. We're not coming across the circulatory roadway. Everything is on the perimeter. And these splitter islands are super important, and we'll talk about those a little bit more. So if we zoom in a little bit, if I'm a pedestrian that's sitting here getting ready to cross, and I'm this guy that's right here, up here, that yellow angle is where I'm looking at. So I'm looking at the red car, and I'm looking at the brown car behind it. As soon as I find an acceptable gap to cross, I'm crossing about 12 to 14 feet of pavement to get to my splitter island. And then once I'm there, I'm turning my head and looking at the other direction, going the other way. So if I'm in the middle where the blue box is and I'm looking the other way, I don't see anybody coming, I've got an acceptable gap, I can make my cross. Okay. So slower speeds allow you to make those decisions easier. Granted, there's no push button, there's no walk light for you, but to cross 14 feet of pavement, looking at vehicles going 15 to 20 miles per hour, it makes it easier to cross those gaps. And then, of course, state law, once pedestrians are in the crosswalk, you have the right of way. So once you're there, technically vehicles are supposed to stop for you. So that's some of the safety metrics. Let's do some cost analysis. So a little preview of tonight, we're getting ready to award a traffic signal improvement project at the intersection of Monroe, Main, and Summit. Our low contractor's bid, that's a T intersection at Summit and Monroe, so we've got three legs. Our lowest amount, and it's a full traffic signal replacement project, is just over $500,000. This is a cost estimate that we did for Brent Road and Haroon. Again, another T intersection, but no traffic signal here. This one in terms of a roundabout. We applied for congestion mitigation and air quality funds, and our construction cost estimate was just under $1.3 million. So let's do the analysis on it. For a traffic signal improvement project, $500,000, roundabout 1.3, exact same configuration of an intersection. For roundabouts, I can get grant funding in usually two mechanisms, congestion mitigation and air quality, CMAQ, or even better, highway safety improvement program funds. The congestion program is an 80-20 match, so 80% of the construction cost is covered with federal dollars, 20% is local. That gets even better in the Highway Safety Improvement Program at 90-10. So let's step through two projects here. I want to do either a traffic signal or a roundabout. My traffic signal replacement project, there is no federal funding available to replace that traffic signal. If there's one, I would have found it. It doesn't exist. So I'm the full local cost of that project. All $500,000 has to come from me. Now, I've been able to be pretty creative on Ohio Public Works Commission projects to try to get some funding on those, but again, that's a state fund. That's not a federal project. So all 500 is mine. Look at the roundabout alternative, and I'll break it down from CMAC and Safety Improvement Program. So $1.3 million times 80%, that means the federal government is willing to cover just over $1 million, and that leaves me with a balance of $260 to cover. That's a 48% cost savings by doing a more expensive project but getting the federal government to help. That gets even better as a Safety Improvement Program project. $1.17 federal dollars, that gives me $130,000 local on my end. That's a 74% cost savings by doing a roundabout project. So just from a financial picture, certainly worth looking at just about every intersection that I do that's signalized. And the money is why. It's where the federal programs are at. So locally, that's just a bunch of federal stuff, right? This is what USDOT and Federal Highway says. What about here? What does this look like in Northwest Ohio? You know, what's the real data shows with roundabouts on the ground? So, TEMACOG, our metropolitan planning organization that we belong to, did a roundabout study. They published it in July 2023. So what this did, at the time, through 2022, we had 55 area roundabouts that were on the ground. They were in Lucas and Wood counties, and our three townships in Monroe County, Whiteford, Bedford, and Erie Township. So it looked at all 55 of those. And what they did was they looked at accident data 3 years pre-roundabout, whether that was a four-way stop condition or whether that was a traffic signal. And then they looked at the 3 years post-roundabout construction. And then they actually looked for every year after that, too, through 2022. And so each intersection of the 55, they had their own report that was prepared. So the one on your right is the Brent Kink one that was prepared. So what did it show us on this? This is the only roundabout that we have in our municipal limits. A lot of numbers there, but I don't want you to get too bogged down in it. We'll kind of walk through. So data is over here, and we'll kind of walk through what each one of these are. But I've got 3 years pre-construction. I've got 3 years post-construction, whatever change that is. And then it looks for all of the data since it's been a roundabout. So for Brent King, it was constructed in 2014. Data started in 15, 16, and 17. And the report went through 2022. So 3 years beforehand, it was a four-way stop. We had 10 crashes, which is in the gray box here. That works out to 3.3 crashes per year. We had one fatal. We had a minor serious injury crash. We had a possible injury crash. And we had six PDO as property damage only. So that means if we come together in our cars, our fenders get busted, but we're both okay, that's a property damage only accident. So our severity index, and that's a measure that we use in safety, is each one of those metrics. Fatal gives a heavy weight. If you have a fatal intersection, your severity goes way up. And obviously, as you work your way down, it's weighted less as you go. So the severity index for Brent and King was 21.6. So if you go to 3 years after the roundabout, we had the same number of crashes. Didn't reduce any. We're still at 10. But the crashes per year was the same, right? 3.3, the same numbers. But our fatals are gone, our serious injury crashes are gone, our minor injury crashes are gone, our possible injury crashes are gone. We didn't have anything. So all we had were 10. All 10 of those were property damage only crashes. So our severity index improved by almost 96%, 95%. That's a huge metric that should never be overlooked in any of these that we do. Lower speeds mean less severe crashes. And at Brent and King, it certainly points in that direction, too. So what does it look like since it's been done? Was that 7, 8 years of data? 23 total crashes. So that's down about a half a crash per year. Not a great metric, but down. We had one possible injury crash, and all the rest of the 22 were property damage only crashes. So again, our severity index has stayed down in 7 or 8 years since it's been built. So pretty good improvement at that intersection. Okay, so that's just Brick and King. I wanted to walk you through that. Now, this is the entire study. This is all 55 that are in our area, okay? And what you're looking at on this slide is single-lane roundabouts only. I'll show you double in a minute. Okay, it's the same table. Table 55 on top is 3 years pre-construction. Table 56 is 3 years post-construction. So in the green boxes that I have highlighted there, 3 years, all 55 roundabouts, 4 fatal crashes at the intersections, down to 0 with a single-lane roundabout. Total crashes, 432, 3 years pre-construction, post-construction, 303. That's a 30% decrease in total crashes. And then total injury crashes, 150 down to 67, 55% decrease in injury crashes. Huge metrics there. Double lane. This will be interesting because I hear a lot about double lane roundabouts as well. So what does the data suggest? Same thing. We're going to look at the same thing in the green box. No fatalities before, no fatalities after. But look at the red numbers there. Total crashes, 156 up to 466, a 299% increase in total crashes at a double lane roundabout before it is. Injury crashes, the same thing as you might expect with the number of crashes going up from 41 to 75, 183%. It's a typo there, but 183% increase in injury crashes. So what does the data suggest about a double lane roundabout?
Not a good idea.
Not very good, right? We're still really trying to figure those things out. We can't get out of each other. And as a matter of fact, we're actually injuring each other too. So some interesting data on the multi-lane roundabouts. Okay, so I dug really deep into the data too to look at pedestrians and bikes. So I'll go back one slide at the bottom down here. 769 total crashes is what we're looking at. Out of all 769 total crashes that were in the report, 2 involved pedestrians. Those were logged as in the police reports as something involving a pedestrian. So one was at Redan Cherry in Detroit. That's in the city of Toledo. It was at a multi-lane roundabout. What was funny about reading the report, a car had stopped and waved a pedestrian through to cross at the crosswalk, then proceeded to run and hit them and flee the scene. So, sounds like something was going on there. Doran McCord, Springfield Township, a multi-lane roundabout. Actually, the accident was not at the roundabout. When you looked at it, it was down a driveway or two. 2 pedestrians were struck east of the roundabout in a private driveway from a vehicle fleeing the scene of a previous accident. So, I could say easily of the 769 crashes that were in the report, 0 were related to pedestrians being hit in a single lane roundabout. Bike crashes, same metrics. 4 crashes of the 769 that were logged. I won't go into these too much, but 2 of them were at multi-lane roundabout. All of these were legit. One of them was a vehicle exiting the roundabout. He got hit by a bicyclist who was using the crosswalk, legit accident. Another multi-lane roundabout at Cherry in Manhattan, vehicle and bicycle accident due to improper lane change in the circulatory roadway, again, legit accident. Out in Perrysburg Township, Paul Prairie and Roachton, single lane roundabout here, a bicyclist had got rear-ended by a vehicle who thought they were gonna proceed into the roundabout, hit their tire and knocked them over. And then Brenton Mitchell, closer to home, a vehicle had failed to yield to 2 bicyclists who were in the circulatory roadway. So 4 legit bicycle crashes there. Okay, a lot of the data there, so let's work our way a little closer to home. Roundabout ADT, so when we start here as engineers, or when Eric and I take a look at what works as a roundabout in Sylvania, we look at ADT, average daily traffic. It's a huge metric. The more cars that you add, the more lanes you need to add, and the worse that the performance goes down, as we just demonstrated. So for us, 20,000 vehicles per day using an intersection is about the metric we look. Anything under that works great. Getting up to that limit, you have to start looking at some considerations. Over that, you're starting to add lanes into the roundabout, and that's where we just demonstrated things start to go south. So this is a map of Sylvania. This is our average daily traffic. This is all just interpolated from Team Acog's site. So I just plopped on here all of our main roadways and intersections that are in our municipal limits. Green is the least amount of vehicles. And then as you work your way from yellow, orange to red, is the most vehicles that you see. So when you start to think about where in our town these could go and be effective, I'm looking probably in the green to yellow, and if I get to the orange sections, I need to start to look a little closer at what's going on. So if I interpolate those into dots at all of our main intersections, red, we'll start with those, are usually your not likely locations, and that makes sense. A lot of Silica and Main and Haroon as we get through our interchange down Monroe Street. ADT is pretty high through there. I'm usually going to end up with something that's a double lane roundabout, and as we just demonstrated, probably not a good likelihood of success on those. Orange would be your potentials. So we've got a couple of those on the map. Starting over here on the west side of town at Centennial and Erie, Centennial and Little, Erie and Sun Valley. Orange, or we'll do yellow in a minute. Those are actually ones that are planned. Main and Erie, and then Brenton McCord. So I'm not saying those are roundabouts. I'm saying those are potential ones. Those certainly have ADT characteristics where you would certainly want to look hard at those locations.
The one, that's Jeffrey, isn't it? Second one from the left?
Sun Valley. That's where the existing traffic signals are.
Really?
Yep.
I thought that was where I come out to get here.
Yellow are the ones that are planned, and we'll look at those a little bit closer. Those are ones we actually either have funding or will be looking at getting funding for. And we went through red already. So again, just kind of flipping back and forth, you can kind of see where less traffic is at, where these look to be pretty effective. And again, where more traffic is, where these become less effective. Okay, so just to kind of close, I'll go over some locations that were the yellow dots on the map. Erie and Monroe was on our cover sheet. This is a planned roundabout. We just got stage one plans submitted today for it. It's a 2027 design. Looks different. It actually is a single lane roundabout, just pulled apart in the middle and to capture two different intersections. Britton Haroon is a funded roundabout project. We got CMAQ funding for that. That's a T intersection that's planned for 2028. Main and Convent is a funded roundabout project. We got Surface Transportation Block Grant funding for that. That's a 2029 project. And then two, as a preview for the next council meeting, we're going to be requesting for safety funds for two intersections in that triangle area of Brent, Haroon, and Holland, Sylvania. This particular one is at Brent and Main. That's our water tower on the northeast corner. The swim school is at the southwest corner. So a planned roundabout there, that's an ellipse, that's a different look, but fits and uses less right-of-way than a circular one. And then Haroon and Holland, Sylvania, just down an intersection, again an ellipse, fits the intersection well. That will be a March 25 application. So that's all the information I had to present. I'm more than willing to answer any questions that you may have or go back and look at any slides. So,
well, thank you. That was a fantastic, fantastic presentation. That was really, really helpful. So thank you for that. I'll at this time open it up to members of the committee or city council that would want to start with any comments or questions. Then we'll move on to audience comments.
Mr. Schott, first of all, great presentation, so helpful and educational, and the five locations you mentioned that are in the future, are all of those single roundabouts or are any of them two-lane?
I'm not proposing any two-lane. I don't think the data suggests any of those.
I mean, that's what you said. I caught that. That's what I just want to make sure they're all single.
We're not there yet. We can't handle them well, and the data proves that. I would never shove one where the metrics don't show that. All singles.
Anything else from council members?
Mr. Schott, this analysis, you know, with the traffic studies and you know, where it may have potential for a roundabout, is that your own analysis? Is that standard? I'm just curious about the other municipalities in the area where we also see roundabouts going in?
Sure, I can't answer what other ones do. I know what I like to do here and look at ADT, and that's a, this is a major driver. The more vehicles you add, it increases the footprint of it where you need to add lanes, and that's where it starts to get really, really dicey in terms of effectiveness. You can keep those things on footprints that are single lane, so much more effective than, you know, per data that Team of Cup put together suggested to.
Well, at this time, if there is anybody that has a question, please feel free to come on up to the podium. That way your voice is picked up on the recorder for the record. State your name and address for the record, and I'm sure we'd be happy to address any questions you have. Is there anybody in the audience that has any specific questions?
Yeah, I've got one.
Please come on forward. Just state your name and address, please, for the record.
Chadbury, a little bit west lane. As far as where you're looking at, the streets that come out on the, when you come out of the subdivisions on the main streets, do you actually attempt to measure what the traffic is coming out of the subdivisions on the main streets? I know you do across the main streets as far as, you know, traffic flow in a given period of time. I just kind of wondered how you, this kind of ties into what I was talking about to you earlier in that.
It's a great question. I'll use Erie and Monroe as a prime example of that.
Okay.
Several of our council members happen to live in Old Post, off of Old Post Road, that's in Sleepy Hollow. And we look specifically at gap analysis for that. So you take a signal out, you plop in a roundabout. How is that subdivision going to work? How are those people going to get out and make left turns? It's called a gap analysis. We did a study for it. It found that the roundabout actually makes it slightly better, not marginally better, like huge better, but good enough to make it work. But it was, it's reviewed. It's a good point. It's something you got to look at. You got to see who's adjacent to it and who can get in and out. But we do, of course, we look at it. It's a good question.
Anything else? Yeah, please come forward. And just your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Deb Jones. I live at 5831 Main. I live very near the intersection of Main and Erie, and I'm just wondering what the current thinking is on that intersection. I'm concerned, of course, about what my neighborhood's going to look like.
Sure. Just from a metric perspective, it doesn't take anything else into account. You know, if you go back and take a look, it's a little hard to see, but I'll maybe use my pointer. So right in there is Main Street. The vehicle count per day is certainly down to a level. In the first block of Main, it's in that 5,500, 6,000 cars per day. In the second block, it's down a little bit more, maybe like a little bit under 5,000 vehicles per day. So from a metric standpoint, does it fit? Sure. You could take a signal and make it around there. We've elected not to with this downtown project, and we're stopping the project short. But from a data perspective, does it suggest that one could work? Sure. Whether we do one, I can't answer that. I know it's not included in our downtown project, but does it sense?
So right now it is not.
It's not. So okay. It's just shown as a potential because it meets the metric. Doesn't mean that it's going to be just meets the metric.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
What's the intersection in Sylvania, the yellow one?
It is Sylvan Lakes, right by Kroger. So if you go back a map, it really drops off in ADT as you go west of King, and that's the only traffic light that we have there. So could it be one? Yeah, we'd have to really look, take a hard look at that, but it could be one. Okay. Nothing on Sylvania Avenue. Sylvania and King, no. Sylvania McCord, for sure not. And pretty much, I kind of put a red dot on where the Flower Hospital signal is going. We're putting one in there this year. So is it likely that I'm going to turn that into a roundabout? No. The ADT suggested it could, but no.
Anything else from members of the administration? Any other questions, comments? Nothing?
One of the reasons that I thought it was helpful to have a meeting like this, Mr. Richardson, was to provide this information to the broader community, as you and I chatted about. So I'm glad that we were able to answer some questions and address this, and obviously it's going to be available to the public for recording and listening to it in the future. So,
great.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah.
Will we be posting this presentation on?
I can't. I didn't audio record it. I certainly could put some context to it, but I can make it available.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's fun.
Sure. Absolutely. Great. So that'll be available. And, you know, as always, we appreciate it. This was fantastic. I think a lot of great information came out of that, and it was presented in a way that I could understand it. So thank you for that. That was very, very good. Very good. If there's nothing else, then let's see. It is 7:47. We're a little late for our council meeting. So is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All members of the committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. 7:47. Thank you all.